Welcome to the Full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy, recording at 1:11 p.m. that is Pacific Summer Time. Today is August 23rd. I apologise for the technical difficulties we had yesterday with Vimeo and with uploading the site, but they've all been solved. And what I thought I would kick off today with was talking about what's going on in Australia. Well, Malcolm Turnbull is on the precipice of being the latest Prime Minister not to be able to serve a full term. Australia has been cycling through Prime Ministers since 2009, and he may just be another footnote in history. The reality is that the Australian dollar has been trending lower in a very consistent manner since the beginning of this year. And today's additional downward dynamic confirms resistance in the region of the overhead trading range. There are a significant number of people starting to talk about the potential for the Aussie to get all the way down to 70 cents. Well, 70 cents looks like a psychological area because it represented support back in 2015 and early 2016. But when we look at this on a longer term basis, then 60 cents is where the price bounced back in 2008. It's also an area that represented support back in the 80s and in the early 2000s. Or sorry, not in the early 2000s, in the late 1990s. 50 was where the price found support in the early 2000s. I remember when I came back from Australia in early 2000, I was getting not very much short of £1 for every three Australian dollars, which was a bit of a shock to the system. Well, when we look at the consistency of this longer term chart, certainly 70 cents represents a potential area of support, but it's a very consistent trend on the downside. And of course, it is being influenced both by what's going on politically in Australia, but also, of course, what's going on in terms of the commodity markets. If we look at the continuous commodity index, it is right back on its lows. It's trading below that psychological 400 level, and this has also been a pretty persistent and consistent decline since that peak failed break, in fact, above 440 back in May. Well, this has now encountered resistance at the lower side of the overhead trading range, and what is, I think, very much worthy of consideration is the distinct absence of very clear upward dynamics when we've come down to what look like accelerated lows in the very short-term trend. If we go just scroll a little bit further back on that daily chart, we can see that there was very clear upward dynamics from this level back in late August of last year. That was one of the catalytic events that saw the price rally pretty impressively, at least 10% over the course of the next 8 or 9 months. We just have not had that kind of upper dynamic in the continuous commodity index yet. Now, if we then perhaps just break things down and look at gold. Gold is another example of that. It got all the way up to 1200, and then it has pulled back in here today by about $10. There has been an absence of clear upward dynamics, and this still remains a reasonably consistent decline, even though it did accelerate somewhat last week. Well, it needs to break the progression of lower rally highs to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. And $1,200 is a psychological area of support. It has offered support on multiple occasions in the last few years. So has $1,100, and the price bounced from above, from around the 1,050 area in late 2015. So there's a number of regions which could offer potential support. Perhaps the more important point is that gold is somewhat overextended relative to the trend mean right now, and that holds out the prospect for a reversionary rally. But in order for a reversionary rally to take hold, well, it would first at least need to break the progression of lower rally highs. Then silver prices are in a very similar condition. There's been a distinct absence of clear upward dynamics, and today's downward move, 27 cents, is another step lower in what has been a consistent downtrend. it has confirmed now at least near-term resistance in the region of that $15 area. And $15 has been an area of support over much of the last 2.5 years. So, and we're not so far away right now from the lows that were put in back in late 2015 and early 2016. So we certainly know that there is a lot of bad news has already been priced into the silver market and indeed into the platinum market. Platinum had already been trending lower because of the diesel scandal, but it has now encountered resistance in the region of the $800 area, and $800 was the low. In fact, it didn't get to $800 back in early 2016. So that's platinum breaking down, and this also represents certainly a steep decline, but generally a consistent decline. And as long as we still have a consistently trending environment, then there is a consistent trend is a trend in motion. The consistency pattern of the trend is that you have a series of steps, one below another, and $800 represented the lower side of the overhead trading range. It was the first area of potential resistance, and the prices have encountered resistance there. Well, if we veer away from precious metals for a moment and look, for example, at the agricultural sector, well, soybeans was really quite overextended when it got down to test that 800 cent level, and it bounced all the way up to 900, but it has been down rather heavily over the last few days. Wheat prices had been firming because of the drought conditions that you have across most of Europe, but they have come back in a rather dynamic manner over the course of the last couple of weeks. And if we then go and look at, for example, sugar, well, sugar prices have been particularly weak over the course of the last few weeks and indeed months. It's still a reasonably consistent downtrend, and the price is now right in the region of the lows seen in 2008 and 2015, but it has exceeded those lows. But 10 cents is a big level. And when we look at the fact that it has paused here, again, there is no clear evidence of very emphatic buying. We need clear upper dynamics to confirm more than short-term support. And so far, there hasn't been any evidence of that. Arabica coffee had accelerated down to the current level. It is now below 100 cents. And it hasn't traded below 100 cents in really quite a long time. So it's time to start now looking at some of the much longer term charts, because when you see that decade-long lows are being taken out in commodity prices, well, then that holds out the prospect that we're going to be looking at historic lows. And that's half the price of where we are right now. 50 cents is where prices bottomed in the mid-90s and in the early 2000s. And these are very long-term charts, but of course there's been a good share of inflation between now and then, and that also helps to highlight just how much these prices are coming back. Well, it also helps to highlight the fact that that trade wars are having an effect, most particularly on the soft commodity sector. If we look at the lumber price, then it has been moving around in with its expanded limit. But the most important point here is that it had pulled back very violently. Then it rallied to close that overextension relative to the trend mean, and now it is down again on consecutive days its limit. So that has now encountered resistance in the region of the trend mean, whereas previously it had been an area of support. That, I think, rather categorically confirms that the uptrend is over. Now, the very big question is whether it is going to be able to sustain the breakout from what is one of the most epic long-term ranges that we have in the commodity markets. Prices had been ranging below 400, despite the fact that it had popped above it on a number of occasions, but never on a sustained basis, since 1992. And now the question is whether that level is going to hold, or whether we're going to see the price come all the way back down into the range. And of course, the price went up because of the threat to NAFTA, So that's also a politically motivated move. Now let's look at the industrial metals. Well, the LME metals index has broken down, and it's been led lower by copper. But what I think is perhaps most important is that it had been trending higher prior to this breakdown in a reasonably consistent manner. That ranges had been relatively similar size, they were one above another, and the trend mean had offered resistance, excuse me, offered support on multiple occasions, and now it has broken down in a very emphatic manner. This is a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. In fact, when we look at this, you see that there were failed upside breaks, very minor ones, but nonetheless, that it had been encountering resistance at 3,500, that there had been a somewhat lengthier range, but then you have this massive reaction against the prevailing trend to confirm a type 2 top formation. Now, quite regularly after a type 2 top, you get a period of ranging. And that might be considered a first step below the top or a distribution below the top. In order to really question the medium-term downward bias, a sustained move back above the trend mean is going to be required. In the absence of that, we can probably conclude that the trend mean is going to represent an area of resistance during any ranging phase that may take place. When we look at copper, well, copper prices have been really quite weak, and they were down again in here today. Again, when we look at it on just a daily basis, we can see that there has been some resistance encountered in the region of the lower side of that underlying, sorry, overhead trading range. Now, copper was off its lows in here today, but it needs to sustain a move above 270 cents to really confirm that we have a low of more than short-term significance. And even then, it would need to sustain a move above the trend mean to confirm a change to the medium-term downward bias. What I think is particularly interesting is that aluminium, which had rallied really impressively at the beginning of or towards the end of the first quarter, and that was on the on it was related to news with about China smelting, if my memory serves me correctly, but it has not pulled back in nearly the same dynamic fashion that copper has over the course of the last few weeks. In fact, 2000 had been an area of resistance in 2017 and again in 2014, and now it's offering an area of support. So that, I think, is one of the on a relative basis, one of the better performing industrial metals. And if we look at the zinc price, well, zinc had been doing rather well until the beginning of this year, and then it has pulled back in a very dynamic manner. But it's come back to the $2,500 level. In fact, it's below that right now. But 2,500 represents the upper side of the range that it had been putting in between 2010 and 2016. So it's a potential area of support, and we're starting to see at least some evidence that support is being found around that 2,500 level, and there's a very deep overextension relative to the trend mean. But if we zoom in, it needs to sustain a move back above 2,600. It needs to push back up into this overhead trading range. This is a similar condition to what we've seen in all of the other commodities that have pulled back so violently. There has been an absence of clear upper dynamics. If we look at the size of the downward dynamic that put in on the 15th, it has taken 5 sessions to unwind it. And this is still the price from yesterday. If we look at the ETFS zinc, then we can see a very similar condition. But it wasn't up in a dynamic manner in here today, and it really does need to confirm that it can push up into the overhead trading range at the minimum to really, I think, give any confidence to investors. Well, when we look at the mining sector. Well, BHP Billiton was down again in here today, but not in a dynamic manner. It has continued to hold the region of the trend mean. Rio Tinto, which does not have nearly as big an energy component and is much more influenced by aluminium, is coming back to test its progression of higher reaction lows. Well, if we look at what's going on in the oil market, oil prices were up in a reasonably dynamic manner yesterday, and they were reasonably unchanged in here today. When we look at that weekly chart, we can see clearly that the region of the trend mean has offered at least near-term support. The progression of lower rally highs from the peak around 80 is now being challenged, and it has bounced also from the region of the upper side of the underlying trading range. So this is still a reasonably consistent medium-term advance for oil prices. Well, if we go back then and look at what's going on in Australia, we know therefore that the commodity complex is probably having a deleterious effect on confidence. The weakness of the Aussie dollar is certainly helping to flatter the earnings of Australian listed miners. So, for example, Newcrest has not pulled back to nearly the same extent as Goldcorp has. But when we look at the ASX 200, then there's a short-term overbought condition, and there's the potential here that it is going to close that overextension relative to the trend mean. But I think it is also worth considering that this is not a particularly consistent trend, that it has been both overextended and on the upside and the downside relative to the mean. Perhaps we get more, I think, input when we look at that longer-term chart. There has been an upward bias to trading over the course of the last decade, and there have been very big ranges, and those ranges have lasted upwards of anything up to 3 years. Well, that suggests that as long as the 6,000 area is holding, that there's another range is probably due somewhere between 6,000 and 7,000, and that it could last a couple of years, and that's if the broad consistency of the trend persists. But the bigger question is with regard to currencies and the outlook for the global economy, because we continue to see downward pressure on commodity-producing currencies. That the Brazilian real was lower in a dynamic manner in here today. This is not far off a new closing low for the currency. The Russian ruble has also, well, if we just simply look at the chart action, it has got the dollar has had a clear breakout. It's a little bit overbought in the short term, but this does not look like a bearish chart for the dollar. When we look at what's going on with the with what's with South Africa, there is the realistic possibility that in order to try and appease its voter base, that appropriation of property is likely to become an election issue in South Africa. And what I think is most important about the trend so far is that the break above 14 has held, and that the progression of lower rally highs since the dollar's peak back at the beginning of 2016 has been broken. So this looks like a sustained breakout so far for the dollar against the rand. And if we look at the Canadian loonie, then we can see that there has been a progression of higher reaction lows since the middle of 2017 for the dollar here as well. So it remains a dollar-dominant environment. We've already seen that there's been an accelerated move in Turkey, that it had a short covering bounce. But the argument that the Turkish lira has stopped, or that this is the terminal low that we've seen already for the currency, I think is rather far-fetched. That Turkey has still got some very big challenges in front of it. And the Argentine peso continues to set new lows. So there are a lot of question marks that are overhanging the commodity producers, and then you have the fact that China might be saying that they're not using their currency as a tool in a trade war, but the performance of the chart tells us otherwise. And the renminbi was weaker again in here today, and the dollar continues to hold its progression of high reaction lows. Now, if we start looking at some of these stock markets, well, the A-share index is barely steady in the region of its lows. And the H-share index in Hong Kong, it has bounced from the low it put in just last week, but so far not in a particularly dynamic manner. So that's not particularly confidence-inducing. The Nifty index continues to move higher. The fact that you have got these epic floods in Kerala perhaps suggests that there's going to be some more stimulus that could help to inflate stock market valuations. When we look at the currency, though, that the fact is that the rupee has broken downwards, and it has been reasonably well, it hasn't been making headlines over the course of the last week, but this is a breakout. And so far it has been sustained. And as long as it is sustained, then we can give the benefit of the doubt to the upside for the dollar here as well. And that is weighing on the outlook for emerging markets generally, the fact that you have got this weakness in their respective currencies. There has been a lot of talk recently about bargain hunting in the emerging markets. I think that talking about the emerging markets in inverted commas is not particularly productive, because it is some of the largest cap or the biggest markets represent some of the biggest risks. When you look at China, Russia, and Brazil, these are places where their currencies are going down rather violently, and that's not probably where we're going to see the greatest buying opportunities. It's more likely to be in the ASEAN countries with improving standards of governance that we're likely to see the buying opportunities that have got some staying power. Then, when we look at what's going on in Europe, well, I think this was I was looking at the World Equity Index page today, and the vast majority of Europe is in negative territory in both a nominal and a US dollar basis. And it has certainly been shielded by the weakness of the currency. When we look at the fact that the Euro stocks is down just about 2.5%, but in US dollar terms down 6%. But even that is nothing compared with the 17% and 22% declines, respectively, that we've seen in China. So Europe is just about holding its own. And when we look at this, just the daily chart, it's been really very volatile so far this year. And that this is a very difficult environment in which to trade. If we ask ourselves simply that is this a beautiful trending market? Well, the answer is no. Is there and what are the consistency characteristics? Well, the only consistency characteristic is that it has gone up a bit, that it's and it hasn't really been consistent since the peak in 2015. The much bigger question is whether this range that's been going on since the beginning of 2017 is a top or a medium-term consolidation. So the index absolutely needs to hold the region of the lower side of this range. And the fact that it has been ranging around the trend mean, and the fact that we've had failed upside breaks inside this range. In fact, one could argue that there is a progression of lower rally highs within this range, suggests that it is certainly not the most bullish environment that we have in Europe right now, considering the exposure that Europe has to both Turkey and China. Then the banking sector is barely steady. It pulled back in a violent manner last week, and again, this is another market that has not had the clear upward dynamics to confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. So when we have relative weakness in commodity producers, emerging markets in Europe, then the relative strength of the USA is the real standout. And the S&P 500 continues to hover in the region of its all-time peak, and it was in mildly negative territory in here today. And then the Nasdaq 100, was in mildly negative territory. It continues to pause around the 7,500 level. But again, there's nothing particularly dynamic about the kinds of moves we're seeing right now. And the fact that you're not getting dynamic moves, that the Russell 2000 broke out in an impressive manner 2 days ago, and so far it has held that advance. Now, that relative strength is helping to compress US yields. That's against a background where we're still talking about an interest rate hike in September and potentially another one in December. The Treasury yield is ranging, and that tells us that supply and demand are back in equilibrium. Against the on one hand, you have the argument that the US economy is exhibiting relative strength, not least because it has seamlessly transitioned from monetary to fiscal stimulus. On the other, that stimulus is going to have to get paid for, and there is an awful lot of outstanding debt that needs to be refinanced. So those two competing arguments are in equilibrium right now, and it's going to take a dynamic move to break out of this range to really confirm which one of them is correct. But what is, I think, continually worth keeping an eye on is the fact that the yield curve spread continues to contract. There is another way of looking at the results from the Fed minutes, and it is that the Fed said that they're going to keep raising interest rates as long as the economy is growing strongly. In other words, they're going to keep raising interest rates until they cause a recession. I think that is the conclusion that the bond market is taking. And that is one of the other reasons why yields are not rallying on the long end of the curve, whereas some upward pressure remains on the shorter end of the curve, just simply because they're raising interest rates. The yield curve spread made another new low in here today, and the 2-year is up to 2.6%. So it does look increasingly like we are going to have an inverted yield curve either at the end of this year or the beginning of next year. And we know that also that historically, the lead for a recession is anything from 6 months to 18 months once we get an inverted yield curve. And therefore, we're talking somewhere around the end of 2019 or 2020 before things really start to contract. When we look at, for example, a share like Amazon, which has been trending higher in an incredibly impressive manner, but also very consistently. Since the somewhat larger pullback that we saw in February and March, it has been trending higher in a staircase step sequence uptrend with one range above another. It would at least need to be pulling back below $1,800 to check that consistency and to open up the potential for another reversion back towards the mean. We know that Amazon is well capable of doing just that. Then Google continues to hold above the $1,200 area, and there's been a distinct lack of downward dynamics. Then Apple is really quite overextended right now, and it is susceptible to some pause and consolidation, but generally speaking, this represents a trend that is picking up pace. And that's one of the most notable factors that the biggest company in the world continues to remain within very close proximity of its all-time high. Then if we look at some of the companies that I regard as canaries in the coal mine, well, Netflix has bounced from the region of the trend mean. It was really due some consolidation, and it is getting it. But the progression of lower rally highs remains intact. It needs to push back above $350 to confirm more than a short-term low. It is, I think, also notable that there was an upside key day reversal when it bounced from the region of the trend mean with upside follow-through the day after. So that confirms a low of at least near-term significance, and it was a bounce from the region of the trend mean. So that would suggest that the canary is still singing, but it does need to do better. And Tesla continues to hold this $300 area, and there is the potential here that Tesla could disappear in the next recession. And considering how much debt it has and its burn rate, that everybody knows that. So it is, I think, it is one of the better canaries in the coal mine, considering that it is highly representative of the riskier edge of the high yield market. But generally speaking, the high yield sector is completely inert, and the spread over treasuries has been going nowhere at all for more than a year and a half already. Well, eventually it's going to break out, and eventually that breakout will be sustained. And when that happens, well, then that is the time to start looking at some of the other potential lead indicators. It's generally when high yield spreads have been expanding for a while, that they really start to pressure the credit markets. And credit generally does tend to lead the equity markets. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.